picking at the locks now, and I'm on the outside. Deep breath, walking out of the shadows, following where the wind blows.
Hey everybody, welcome to the 440 Guitar Podcast. I'm your host, Jarrell Powell. Thank you so much for tuning up. You can guess the podcast on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and anchor.fm/440. Be sure to follow the podcast on Instagram as well, at the 440 Guitar Podcast, to get updates on the episodes coming out. And you can also check out the podcast, of course, on your favorite application of your choice, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anchor.fm/440. And if you have any questions, or if you'd like to send me an email, you can even send me a voicemail on the Anchor website for the podcast as well. You're more than welcome to do so. I'm definitely trying to connect the dots on just speaking to as many artists as possible that deserve to have their story shared, because that's what the 440 is all about. And today is a perfect example of that. I'm very excited to speak with this artist to give you a little bit of idea of this artist in general. This artist has nurtured a signature blend of soul, sonics, and story with passionate vocals and prominent guitars. Some of the artistic touchstones include Sister Rosetta Tharpe, Janis Joplin, Brittany Howard, and early Kings of Leon and D'Angelo. The resulting album, which is the new one coming out, is a mosaic of soulful sounds spanning central blues ballads, smoldering soul, snappy jazz, pop, and indie rock. The 440 Guitar Podcast is very excited to have Sarah Nimitz on the show. How are you?
Jarrell, I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Of course. It's definitely my pleasure. How's the weather on your end? Is it pretty warm out there in Santa Clarita?
It is hot up here. It's about somewhere over 100 for sure.
Oh, my goodness.
Pretty hot. So the AC is going full steam ahead.
Yeah. It's a little hard to create when you feel like you're melting. So
yeah. For sure. How is it by you? You're a little
It's a little humid. Yeah, I'm not gonna lie. It's a little humid. It's not in the hundreds, but the humidity is enough just to slow down the creativity a little bit. But it's all good. It's all good.
It's slow songs today.
Yeah.
All ballads. Sit in a cool dark room.
Yeah. Exactly. So before we get started, what are some things that you have going on for this week in general, as far as any shows coming up, or what do you got going on?
This week is an exciting one. My new music video for Locks, which is the first single, just came out. Well, by the time this airs, it'll be last week. So it just came out. Yeah. So it's been really exciting after working on it and editing it and all of that to finally get to push it out the door, put it out in the open, and send your kid to school, you know? Right, you're off on your own now.
Right, yeah, exactly, exactly. Very cool, very exciting stuff. Definitely. So here on the 440 Guitar Podcast, we're really big on origin stories, how people got to where they are today. And just to kickstart this, tell me about your earliest memory of music.
Ooh, it would have to be probably around three, being in a car. My parents always played music in the car, especially old jazz records in the car, but jazz stations.
And yeah.
So I just remember, I'm from Chicago, and just driving around listening, you know, to Ella or to Miles or something, and being really small, probably being in a car seat. And,
oh, wow.
You know, just looking out the window and listening to jazz. That's probably my earliest musical memory.
Wow. And was there music played a lot in the house when you were growing up as well?
There was. Yeah. Both of my parents are musical. So they don't do it for a living. But when my dad was younger, he played in rock bands in Chicago. And my mom was this accordion whiz. So she started playing accordion at five and played really right up until college, and then kind of, you know, moved into a different thing. But yeah, they're both just huge music lovers. My uncles were in a polka band, and it's always really, really been a part of my family, and just always music around the house.
Yeah.
All of music. Yeah.
Wow. And then growing up, when did you kind of start, either learning or playing instruments yourself when you were growing up?
The first time I started playing guitar, I was about 11. I remember I went to one of the music, like NAMM or one of those things when I was younger here in LA, and just looking at all of these booths and just checking out all the guitars. And I had this kind of 3/4 scale nylon acoustic, which I think we just kind of got because it looked good for my size. You know, I was small and it was easier to play. It was friendlier.
Right.
But then, you know, it got to be a little hard to rock out. A little nylon. So then I remember getting just like a Squire, a little Fender, and playing on that. And so that was for guitar. But I started singing around 4. So that was definitely the first kind of musical thing for me. And my parents and I would go out to karaoke. And I know now karaoke kind of gets that vibe of just something you go do when you're drunk with your friends, or it's a bachelor party or something like that. But we took it so seriously. And I mean, I had my karaoke discs and I had my songs that I love to sing. And that was such an education, getting to just be introduced to so many different styles of music and kind of getting to go to more of a nightlife, but in a friendlier way as a kid.
It's funny because karaoke, I feel like the cheat code is if you can sing. The fun thing about karaoke is when people that try to sing that can't. So it's like, here comes Sarah. She's going to destroy the song. You know?
Yeah, I do. I like about karaoke that there's something for everyone, you know, especially, gosh, in LA, you know, you'll see session singers get up and sing and just ridiculous. Yeah. And then you'll see some guy, you know, totally just drunk out of his mind, get up and try to do, you know, some song he knows from the radio.
Right. So Don't Stop Believing.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a couple songs that always pop up. Don't Stop Believing, definitely one.
Now, as far as, obviously you were bit by the singing bug, was that from your mom or dad, or who was the singer that you think you got that talent?
Gosh, it's hard to really pinpoint one. I guess probably kind of both. Yeah, it was really just always singing around the house. And I remember the Beatles being really big really early on. So we would all just sit around and try to find harmonies to stuff. So my ear was honed really young because you go, okay, well, dad's on the melody and mom's the third above. So I guess I'll, you know, jump on the fifth or whatever.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah. So it's just kind of both of their influences, I think.
When did you start writing your own songs?
I started writing around the time that the 3/4 nylon came into my life. So probably about 11. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And I guess a little bit before that, maybe when I was about 9 or so, I wrote a song. My first song was called I Love Rabbits and Pokemon. Because I had to write about what I knew. I had a pet rabbit, right, a holographic Charizard card, and man, those were the loves of my life. I've still never found a greater love. So,
did you record that song? Is that on SoundCloud somewhere?
Yeah, check out my I Love Rabbits mixtape.
It's a deep cut, you know. Deep so cut. Play it at a concert. It's like, oh, whoever knows,
who are
really
the real
knows.
Fans? Yeah. Yeah. I wish. No, now you're inspiring me. Maybe it's time to record it.
Oh man. And then obviously I like to ask this question as well, because it gives me an idea of, as an inspiration of the artists that I speak to, as far as like, obviously a lot of music's played around the house, and you clearly connected to a lot of, musical things, whether it be vocals or instruments, just kind of gravitated. So you're just within that space. What was there a specific artist that maybe really inspired you to step into that, to kind of, you know, hone that and for you to grow as an artist and to kind of become your own artist? Was there any big inspirations of that for you?
Yeah, there were two for me. The first one was Aretha. I mean, just from the minute I heard her voice, probably around 6 or 7, I was so drawn to her singing and just the way she could tell a story. And I remember we used to go to the library to get CDs, you know, because it was kind of before iTunes and all that.
Right.
And we had this one CD that had Spirit in the Dark, and it had Rose in Harlem, and it had Don't Play That Song, and it was just all this stuff. And I had my little Walkman, and I used to just play it over and over and over again. So Aretha was definitely one of the first ones. And then around the same time was Janis. Janis really, really connected with me too. And I loved her voice. Had another CD of hers from the library that between the Aretha and the Janis CD, I would just play them over and over and over again.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, when was the time when you were like, you know what? I'm going to start a band. Let's do this.
Yeah.
Rock and roll. When did that happen? What was that experience?
It was kind of a weirder thing as far as playing with a band. That happened a little later for me because I moved to LA when I was 7 for more singing and acting opportunities. And I did a lot of session work and stuff in studios. But at that point, it was never really with a band. You know, it had already been recorded and I was just coming to do the score for a movie or something like that, or, you know, a jingle or my own record. And it wasn't really until I had just gotten out of high school that I first had that experience of putting a band together. And it was incredible. We played at just some small clubs around LA, and we played everything from earlier rock stuff. We played Hendrix stuff and Free. And then we played a lot of Marvin and Tammy stuff. And it was just so great to get that experience of singing in front of a band, which, you know, is so different from karaoke because all of a sudden it takes it off of you. It's not just you. It almost felt like a sport. Like you have all your teammates and you're all coming together to create something greater than yourself. So I really loved that. So that was, right around 18. I came to that a little bit later.
Wow. And then growing up, but was it when you were, you know, obviously involved a lot in a lot of things musically, when was the moment, kind of backtracking slightly, but when was the moment when you're like, okay, I want to do this like full time, in general, like when was that just as early as those moments, or?
I always knew. And then, you know, as you get older, you sometimes kind of go, did I always know, or is my impression just that I've always known? You know, like, was there a point? I don't remember all of my childhood, clearly, obviously, but I recently found some old stuff from, you know, when you're 3 or 4 or 5 and your teacher has you go, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And it's always, I mean, like dinosaur herder is always one of the, you know,
I would be an astronaut. Astronaut.
but mine was always music. So, I mean, I have evidence that it really has always been that. But when I got into high school, and pretty much all of my life before that, I was just really, really into the academics, huge nerd, still am, and spent just so much time studying for the SAT and making sure I had all the AP classes and just really being up until 2-3 in the morning doing homework and then starting school at 7 and just really... My goal was to really be able to get into a good school. But somehow I always knew that music was what I wanted to do. And I also knew I didn't want to go to school for music. And I mean, I've got most of my friends went to school for music and just loved it. But I always wanted to kind of learn it more on the job and less traditionally. So when I was going to go to school, I was going to study international relations with a focus in Chinese because that was what I had studied in high school. And I loved the language. But a part of me was kind of conflicted because I went, okay, if I go to college, I'm just going to be doing it because that's what you're supposed to do. But I'd be going away from music. And I was kind of, and then I got my acceptances and I had gotten in where I wanted to go. But then I kind of had this moment where I had to decide, okay, am I going to really, really continue to dive into music, or am I going to go off on this other path that'll lead me to a totally different thing?
Right.
And I ended up just deferring all of the college acceptances. And I thought, okay, well, I'll wait 1 year. And then, you know, just
1 year turns into forever,
12 years or whatever. Yeah. I have no degree. So it was kind of, I guess, around 18 where I really 100% made that commitment of, okay, this is it. This is what I want to do. And this is how I want to do it.
How did your parents respond to that? Cause obviously they know, you know, they know how smart you are and how you were getting into these schools that you applied for and everything. And to say, you know what, I'm going to do music. Like, what was your parents like? What are you doing?
You know, I lucked out because they love music so much. So
they understood.
I mean, they never expressed any frustration to me. I would be a little annoyed if I was a parent. I was like, I spent how much on your SAT prep courses? Mm-hmm. And but no, they were really cool with it. And they're also, my mom was a teacher, so they're also just big proponents also of learning. So they didn't look at all of the studies like that time was wasted. I think they looked at it like, you know, you still learning how to learn is a great thing. So yeah. they still appreciated it and were really supportive. So
yeah,
that was a real blessing.
Wow. I was going to ask you too, cause you know, it's interesting that you said that you decided not to, for as much as you like music, you didn't want to go to school for it. And did you feel like there would be some type that you wouldn't be able to learn it within your realm of creativity or how you kind of mold the, you know, what your musical interests are like? Or was there anything particular with just the structure of going to a music school that kind of veered that, had you veer away from that?
It was always just a gut feeling that I never really tried to step back and unpack. Mm. I guess if I did try to, there's something about a lot of the artists that I really, and I'm all for, you know, education. I think it's so important and I think it's amazing, but I also think there's a lot of different ways to learn. And I always kind of looked at music, for me at least, as almost more like a trade where, sure, you could go to school a little, but a lot of what I learned was from shadowing and mentoring and stuff. And I was really fortunate to have some great mentors that I could kind of just like, you know, sit at their feet, metaphorically. Like yeah. I sat at the same level, obviously, but and just learn from them. And a lot of the artists that I looked up to, that was kind of just their path, just learning on gigs and learning. And not everyone can do that, but that was something that I was really lucky to kind of have some of these people that were willing to teach me. So that was kind of the way that always felt right for me. But, yeah. I've got so many friends that went to, you know, USC or Juilliard, and they can read sheet music better than anyone on earth and are amazing players. And
right.
So, yeah, I mean, that was just the way that felt right for me.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I released an album earlier this year, and I didn't go to school for music either. I was considering it, but it just never went there. But I always find it interesting connecting with artists that did. Or that are trained in that manner of sight reading and things like that. And you kind of have to meet in the middle creatively.
Right.
You know,
because there's things that their education level, we might just not have, but then there's also things where, you know, learning it with your master's from the School of Hard Knocks also teaches you things. What was your reason for not wanting to pursue the traditional school route?
You know, it's interesting. It's funny you say that. It's funny because I've had this conversation with a few other folks that I talk music stuff with, and we always bring up this movie Whiplash. I don't know if you've ever seen it. It's one of my favorite movies. It's one of my favorite movies. It's just the notion of being passionate and trying being the best musician you can in a world that, you know, might not understand it. Just that identity is very interesting to me. Mm-hmm. But as far as for my notion of not pursuing it, it might be slightly similar to yours. Originally, I was considering, I think I was in over my head, because originally I took college courses in like music theory. And then I took a semester of jazz performance.
Oh, cool.
And yeah.
For guitar,
it was like jazz ensemble.
Okay.
But cool. but I came in with the guitar, you know. So the professor is a brilliant, you know, musician, and you know, played 3-5 instruments. He can transpose all of the instruments to help us learn what the tunes were. So we're just like, what is happening?
Right.
But I think once I realized, you know, and I'm a huge jazz enthusiast, once I realized how much went into it, I think I got overwhelmed and almost like, man, like, did I learn the wrong instrument? Should I have been learning piano this whole time? I was messing with the guitar, you know what I mean? and then just the notion of how how long these things can take until you get to a point where you can just forget everything you've learned and just play, but still instinctively have those things in your brain. So I think it kind of scared me a bit, I guess. And then thinking of like not being good enough and then just kind of sticking to why I wanted to pick it up in the first place. So one of my favorite musicians is Jack White. I just feel he's one of my favorite artists. I saw him at the SoFi Stadium not too long ago. How he approaches music has always been something I highly respect. Just someone who just like, I have an idea, I'm going to do it. Yeah. And then
he's such a real music lover. Like,
yeah.
He loves it. It's such a cheesy, overused phrase, but for all the right reasons, you know, like
right.
He loves the history of it and the music and yeah.
It's like he respects it. And then he approaches it in a very genuine way. I mean, even with the White Stripes, as far as how they approach certain songs. And I remember there was this one journalist, he said something that was very interesting. He was like, "This is like the fakest but the most real band I've ever I've ever heard of."
How do you respond to that?
And I knew, but I knew exactly I knew exactly what he meant, because you have these empty spaces because of how Meg drums and then how Jack is playing, and then he's creating these melodies and, you know, harmonizations. So it seems empty, but it seems full at the same time. So I was always astonished. I was always like, this is incredible. Like, I love this. You know what I mean?
It sounds like nothing else. And you can obviously hear the blues influences, but he makes it modern and his own. And yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've always loved his voice too. And his unique voice. I've always loved his voice. And
now he's got the blue hair thing going. He's got
now is it the blue. Yeah. Now he's in the blue hair phase. So I'm like, okay, I'm rolling. That's cool.
I respect that. He's an artist. He's going to do what he feels and what inspires him. And it makes it so interesting to follow people like that.
Right. And I think tying it back, I think that's the reason why I didn't want to approach music in that kind of structure. You know, I kind of wanted to approach it similar to how he approached it and everything. So I think how you approached it is very much, to me, that's really the, and like you said, everyone learns differently. Right. But I feel like once you're not reading things on paper, you're not learning in a traditional sense, you know, I feel like when it comes to like, okay, this is when you really learn, you know, how you really learn connecting with people, have people be mentors and you know, building blogs. Like, that's really the stuff that isn't really taught, really, you know. It's like, that's kind of like, well, you're on your own, you know. And
things that people sometimes look down on, like sometimes people hate on wedding gigs and that kind of stuff, but I've learned so much on gigs like that. I mean, nothing makes you want to prep more and be slightly terrified as when someone says, okay, so we need you to do this list of songs, here's 40 songs and you have to know them by Saturday, and you just have to, or you're gonna get paid, you know.
Right.
That's a great, that's very inspiring too, to be like, okay, well, my utility bill doesn't care, so I better get it together. Yeah.
It's like
very motivating.
Landlord needs it one way or another. Yeah, exactly. Right.
They don't care that I just wasn't feeling it that day.
You know? right. Exactly. Yeah, there's an interesting, it's interesting as far as, you know, knowing artists, and I've had this conversation with a few of my friends too, as far as like just how that feels when you're going to school learning something incredible, you're learning all these really complicated concepts and ideas and counterpoint, and you know, you may be learning Bach and analyzing Bach and jazz, and then when you graduate you're playing 4-chord songs.
Yeah, it is funny. And then a part of me is like, well, maybe, you know, my vocabulary is not what it would be, my musical vocabulary, if I had gone, maybe it'd be more sophisticated.
Yeah.
But I mean, you also could have lost something. Or I've got people that are friends that have gone and kind of had their spirits broken by it and almost felt like they lost that spark for really loving music. So,
yeah. I think there's beauty in both. You know, I think. Right. I think it's important to know both, but I feel like those four chord gigs, I feel like that is there's an importance in that and understanding yeah. like those things and knowing those things. Cause I feel like to your, you know, kind of what we discussed in general, as far as just like when you're out in the world and you're learning different music things that maybe not be exactly what you learned, but you're able to connect it because of your knowledge. Like, I feel like that's where when the true learning and, you know, totally. And that stuff comes into play. You know,
I remember when Esperanza Spalding was, I mean, she's been on the scene for a while, but when she was really kind of getting popular, when she won that Grammy over Bieber and everybody was on
that.
Yeah,
she's a genius.
I'm such a fan of her. She's another one of those like real artists. And I think she studied a lot too, but
she's wonderful.
I remember reading an interview with her and she was talking about that same thing of, you know, going, never really looking down on any gig and never being like, man, this isn't my bag. This is less than me or whatever. Cause there's always something to be learned there and to hone your skills. And I'm like, shoot, if Esperanza Spalding feels that way, then the rest of us mere mortals, we really have something to learn.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. No.
Always something to learn. And then I love that, you know, even though whether you went to school or not, by the time you've graduated or gone into the real world, I love that we can still keep learning. Like I'll get sheet music books and I'm like, I'm not the greatest reader. Okay, let's sit down with a piano and like try to read this and learn it and keep trying to grow.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, I completely agree. Yeah. I before I go into the next thing of what I wanted to ask you, one of the funniest experiences, or at least I find funny now, is I worked with a saxophone player for my last album, and he is kind of like a musician's musician, you know, where he, you know, I want to say he went to music school in like Russia or whatnot, and played alto saxophone, and you know, I was trying to write these melodies on like my sheet music program, and they were just wrong. And he's like, I can't read this. I don't know what, the, you know, and I'm like, oh my God, you know.
Can I just play it for you?
Yeah, I'm like, well, let me just play on the guitar, see if he can connect it, you know. And well, luckily, he was a fantastic improviser. I ended up managing working with him just very conceptually, and he was able to bring out, you know, the music. So it's just funny as far as just the concept of meeting in the middle, where it's like, okay, this is where we connect, you know.
Yeah. And I love that too with a collaborator, because Linda Taylor, who's this amazing guitar player and producer, and she's the person that I did this record with. She went to school a little bit. I don't think she went to school for a super long time, but she, as far as theory and reading and writing and studying all the Bach craziness, and she is so educated musically, and it's amazing, you know. And she'll talk about all these wild chords and, you know, voicings and blah blah blah, and I just kind of sit and smile and nod. Yeah. But it's so amazing to work with someone like that, and to send things back and forth, and just that collaboration and what we both kind of bring out of each other is really exciting.
Right. Because there's a sense of there's something that she admires about you. And
I guess
vice versa.
She keeps picking up the phone.
So, right.
Yeah. And definitely vice versa. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that connection is really, really special. Definitely. Yeah. So tell me about your most recent album that you are working on. It's your fourth album, correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Go ahead and tell me about it. Tell me what's the concept around it. What are some things that you're trying to input to output to your audience? Just tell me a little bit.
Sure. It's called Superman, and it comes out October 28th. And it started during the pandemic. So like everyone, you know, during the pandemic, we were all trying to figure out what do we do and how do we pay our bills and stay creative. And, you know, that's been talked about to death. But I connected with Linda during that time. And I had seen her play around L.A. before and just thought she was a great player. But my last gig before going into lockdown was for this composer, Jason Robert Brown. And I sang with him, and Linda was the guitar player on it. She was just hired as like a hired gun. And I got there and I saw her, and I was so excited to get to sing with her again. And there were several different singers, and Jason sings as well. So I sang maybe three or four songs. But in those three or four songs, we had these really great musical discussions, and there were moments within the song where we were able to kind of stretch and kind of trade, and I just loved it. And then we ended up exchanging emails in the weeks, months, years to follow, and ended up working on songs remotely. I would send her ideas, she would send me ideas. We had Spotify playlists that we would both add songs to. And it started out with a couple singles that we both thought, hey, you know, these sound pretty cool. And then I asked her if she wanted to make an album with me and, you know, quit messing around with the singles and dive into the deep water, you know. She wanted to musically move in together, you know. And she was up for it. And we wrote all of the music, did all of the demos. Linda wrote the charts. Because you don't want me to write these charts.
Right, yeah. It's like, I don't understand any of this. That would be in my situation.
So she did that. And then we went into the studio in January of this year. And I got COVID during the session, so that was fun. Of course, none of us knew until it was one of those things on the last day. Our engineer was like, after he got home, guys, I just tested positive. And then sure enough, that night you're like, it was worth it. And we got all of this stuff recorded in 4 days. And then we've been just mixing it over the last months and getting it together, and it's all mixed and mastered now. And the first single, Lox, has come out, and now we're just making the music videos, promoting it, getting it ready to come out. And it's really an album about, you know, looking at the past and looking at where you've been. I'm speaking kind of generally, but and kind of figuring out what things, you know, don't serve you and areas where you've grown, and really just embracing who you are and just claiming that and going forward, not really being concerned about, you know, what might someone think of me or, oh, what is, you know, just really taking inventory of the voices that you're listening to and making sure that they align with, you know, who you want to be and who you are. So it's all kind of each song in this album are like chapters in a book. And it's kind of this story of arriving at that through the pandemic and then going forward now into a less masked days.
Right.
Maybe.
Right.
Well, I mean, I don't know. It goes back and forth.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Now this is your fourth album. So how would you compare this sonically from your last three? Would you find this to be more of a, like a personal feeling album, or it's called Superman? So I'm assuming there's a lot of type of inspiring type of sonic things in there. How would you describe it from a music sense?
I've had people ask me about the title, and they've gone, well, why is it Superman? Why isn't it Superwoman? And I wish I had a really cool answer, but
Superwoman was taken.
Well, that, and it just doesn't sing as well. It's much harder to rhyme with, right? So many things rhyme with man, but woman, what rhymes with woman? Lumen? I don't know. So that was the reason. It was that. But we really definitely embraced that, you know, finding the superhero inside. And, you know, I really think that everyone has, this is going to sound all, you know, woo-woo for a minute, but I really think that we all have things within us that make us really special and that only we have. So it's about kind of embracing whatever it is within you, whether it's like you're really good at dusting tables, or like you're good at talking to people, you know, because I think that's such a gift. I go up to order at Starbucks and I'm like, oh, hi, how are you? You know, but just about really being yourself and embracing that. And sonically, to answer your question, it's much more gritty and much more rock and roll than anything that I've done before. A lot of my stuff before has been a little more in the kind of singer-songwriter jazz influenced realm, but I've always really wanted to make a rock record, and that's what I grew up listening to. And so finally with this record, I got a chance to do that.
Nice. So you're able to hone in on something that you've been meaning to
really go into. Exactly. So it's really felt like kind of stepping out into that.
That's neat. Were there any songs on the project that were most memorable as far as like create, like as far as working on, where you're like, man, like this experience was, it was difficult getting this done or this done, and then it worked, and then it turned out just even better than you thought? Or
yeah, there have been a couple songs like that on the album, but one that always keeps coming back to mind is a song called Words. Mm-hmm. And originally our working title on it was Primordial Yelling, because like it was late at night, and where I was living at that time, my neighbors below me, I don't know what happened. When COVID came, it was like all hell broke loose. They just started really screaming all the time. I don't know. It actually got kind of scary. I was a little worried, but yeah, all the time, just yelling and whatever. So it was probably one of those nights when, you know, 2 a.m, someone's screaming below me. I'm like, all right, I can scream too. So I plugged my guitar in and just started playing this really open kind of E thing, and kind of, just channeling stuff over it. Not even really any words, but just like, you know, just stuff, and kind of recorded it, stepped back and went, oh, that seems kind of interesting. And then I sent it to Linda, and she had all of these great ideas for it, and we sent it back and forth. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of looked at what the words sounded like, which isn't a way I usually write. Usually I have some kind of words that come to mind, but since this was totally nonsense syllables, mm-hmm, I kind of stepped back and looked at it and tried to figure out, okay, what do these words sound like? If this was a word, what word would it be? And tried to kind of write around that. So this was really, really different. And sonically, it's very 60s acid rock kind of vibe. So really, yeah, really out there. And it was so much fun to go into the studio with that. And everyone just let loose, and we kind of got our doors on. So that was a really fun one.
Neat. Yeah. Very cool. I guess talking about gear a little bit, past few episodes, I haven't been able to talk about gear. Were there certain guitars? What type of guitars did you use for the project?
Yeah, for my demos and stuff, I ended up giving all of the guitar recording on the album to Linda, because she's just such a great guitarist. I mean, I play and I use it as a tool for writing, and I'll play on gigs, but I mean, I'm very much like an artist who plays guitar as a part of it, you know.
I wouldn't
call myself like Linda, who's just a straight up badass guitar player.
Right.
But I've got my PRS, my McCarty that I got around the
594,
time.
The
McCarty. Yeah.
Oh man.
And yeah, I love this guitar so much. So for all of the demos, this one that I was, you know, getting back at my neighbors with, that was all that guitar. And I just, just love this guitar. And then I use acoustics for writing a lot, and I've got a couple different Taylors that I love.
I love Taylors.
I love them. And one's a Grand Pacific that I got a couple years back and have been using a lot. So those are kind of my two go-to guitars. And then I'm not super into the pedal game, so that's still kind of new to me. I'm always looking for a great way to lose money. So, you know,
as musicians tend to.
Yeah. As far as, I mean, my setup is pretty simple. I've got an Apollo X4 that I use for my audio interface, and I go into that. I work with Blue Microphones a lot.
Oh, cool.
They endorse me. So I've got this Bottle Rocket that I use for everything. And it's just, I know the way it sounds in my voice. I love it. So, I mean, I'm pretty simple. I've got a Blue preamp. They've got this Robbie that they have that I really like. I've got a WA76 warm limiting amplifier that I use for limiting.
Cool.
But pretty simple. Yeah, I keep it simple.
Wow.
That way I don't have to give too much mental energy to that. I can kind of, I've got a setup, I've got a system. I can just sit down and go. So I like when I have an idea.
Right.
Yeah, to just go. And then video editing has been something that I've just been doing so much of over the last couple of years. And I'm using Final Cut for that, and I just love it.
Cool. Awesome. Yeah. Awesome. One of the last things I wanted to ask you, it's been a while since I've asked this question, but I do like asking it. How do you feel that you've evolved as a musician, say from the first album to this new one?
Oh, that's a good question. Thank you. I'm trying to think of how to answer that. Definitely just from a technical aspect, I started vocal lessons when I was really young, and I remember what my my voice coach, he was amazing, a guy called Robert Edwards that I trained with for about 12 years, and he just passed away, but he was the best, and he would always tell me that singers, women's voices don't reach like their height of maturity until their 40s, which I've always found so exciting. Because our industry, you know, it's like, you know, you're over 19, you're ancient, you know. But I love that, you know, if you take modern society and its expectations out of it, you're not going to be your best until you're what our industry would consider old. So I've always found that really exciting. So just physically, I feel that as I've gotten older from the first album to now, I feel like my control and overall knowledge of the instrument is a lot better. And just from touring a lot, doing a lot of gigs and work, I just feel like it's gotten a lot stronger, and I don't have to reach for things quite as much or wonder if things will be there. I know how to work around it all. So that's been something really exciting. And then I guess as far as music, just like everyone, it's been, well, I put my first album out when I was 11. So oh, wow. It's been like almost 20 years. And in 20 years, I've listened to so much music. So my influences are just so much broader. So I would say probably just a wider range of influence. And then just having lived 20 years more, you know, there's more triumph and trial, which obviously I'd never hope for difficult times for anyone, but it does make for interesting writing.
Yeah.
So just, you know, more life, more learning. And I think that makes it overall more interesting.
Cool. Neat. Well, Sarah Nimitz, I really appreciate you speaking with me here on the 440 Guitar Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I want to hear your music and hear this the saxophone solo now.
Oh, yeah.
What you had to go through to get there.
Yeah, he's a genius. I'll send you a link after the show.
Yeah, I'd like to do it.
Well, there you have it, folks. This is Jarrell Powell here on the 440 Guitar Podcast. We'll jam again soon, and have a good day. Up to the like a weed from the pavement.